This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
Breaking down each and every position group before spring football kicks into gear here in just a few days. Let's start with defensive line. Obviously, the big story, who will be the next LSU defensive line coach? I do believe things are trending in the direction of somebody in the SEC, not who LSU was initially interested in. Gerald Chapman, of course, of Florida, has already said no, he's going to stick it out in Gainesville. So, obviously, you want to start with defensive line. When you take a look at the five biggest spring holes on LSU's roster, look, I believe this LSU defensive line is a very good but not great unit. I think you're in a position where you could point to every single player that is on this defensive line that you project to play. You could point to every one of them and say, I see that guy being a good player for us next year. Okay. A guy like Jack Pyburn, who comes over with a lot of fanfare from Florida, a guy like Patrick Payton, who we did a film study on over the weekend, but that's a defensive end. The big focus to me is at defensive tackle. Ahmad Bro and Dominic McKinley both had really good true freshman seasons, but I don't think either was so unfreaking believable that makes you think, hey, this guy is going to be a superstar next year. But I do think both of them will be good players next year for LSU's defensive tackle room. And then, of course, you have to worry about some of these DTs leaving the team now that the defensive tackles coach Bo Davis decided to move on from LSU to go to the New Orleans Saints. So I think many are going to say that that is the biggest hole on LSU's roster right now. Okay. Now, the next thing, the second biggest hole, and then we're going to get to some of your comments here, is at safety and just the defensive back room as a whole. I think the more interesting story will not necessarily be the transfers, right? I think Tamarcus Cooley and Mansoor Delane are going to be fine players. But Their positions right now are a tad bit ambiguous. Let's start with Delane, who is the thumbnail image. Is he going to play cornerback? I think he will. I think that's where LSU is expecting him to play. I've heard nothing but good things with Mansoor Delane up to this point of the cycle with him, you know, coming into LSU ready to go. But there are some that think, hey, maybe you could play him at safety. Let's talk this scenario out. Jakeem Jackson is another transfer portal DB who came over from the Florida Gators. What if he's good? What if you have your true freshman in DJ Pickett, your five-star, who you spent a lot of resources recruiting? What if he's also really good? So you have two starting-level corners. Where do you put Mansoor Delane? Well, he does have some experience playing safety, even though at Virginia Tech, he was mostly an outside corner. And the reason why that is a valuable piece of intel is, to me, LSU does not have a bona fide safety on its roster right now at all. Anybody that is proven as a true traditional safety. And then that gets us to tomorrow, who everyone labeled as a safety when it comes to the portal out of NC State. He did not play safety last year. He played nickel, which is different. And this was a, you know, side discussion on Twitter over the weekend. You know, when people do these all-time great LSU discussions, they get Tyron Matthew wrong all the time, right? He was a safety and still is a safety in the NFL, but in college, he was a nickel and a corner. He did not play safety in college, right? So we tend to think of nickel and traditional corner as the same thing. And sometimes we can think of a nickel and a safety being the same things. Now, are there times where you're playing a traditional safety where you're being asked to play man-to-man versus a slot receiver? Yeah. There's some times where you're doing what a nickel normally does, and the same thing is true vice versa. If you're in the nickel, sometimes you are inverting your coverage and you're playing a deep half. Let's just say you're trying to get crazy running cover two or whatever. So it's not that you're just locked into a position, but it is important to note that Cooley did mostly that at NC State. Now, one would like to think if Harold Perkins is going to be the quote-unquote star, which is in many ways a nickel corner. In many ways, it also isn't. But if that is going to be the case, can Cooley play a traditional safety role? I think that he can, and I think LSU would like to see him do that very thing. And then there's a lot of other position group holes, and we'll get to those in just a moment. We say hi to Christopher on Facebook. We say hi to Alex. Good to see you as well. Jerry wants to talk offensive line. It's the next hole we will get to. Bullfrog says Clemson wasn't good running the ball last season. Yeah, I think their running back room underwhelmed in many ways. So there you go. BT says, does LSU football possess the size, speed, and depth and overall talent defensively to match up with one of the best teams in college football week one? So Brian, I'll say, is really high on Clemson next year. And he's not alone. There are quite a few that are really high on Clemson. I will say you might see an even stronger push from Clemson in the national media as far as their hype is concerned, because their name is the biggest name in all of college football right now, them in Florida State. What's going to happen with those programs when it comes to their GORs, their grant of rights? I don't want to get into all of that now because this is not an ACC channel, but I could see Clemson getting really, really, really hyped up before the season begins. Now, let's get to these three other holes that I wanted to discuss. Offensive line. So you have one center locked in, and that's Braylon Moore. He is going to be your center. And then Josh Thompson is going to start at one of the offensive guard roles. So who are your offensive tackles going to be? One would like to think Tyree Adams is in that mix. But to me, you can make a strong case that the LSU offensive line is the single biggest question mark on this team. I know there's a lot of focus on safety. There's a lot of focus on defensive line. But where it gets interesting when you discuss those positions is if you're going to talk defensive tackles and you're going to talk safeties, there's only two of each on the field most of the time. Your offensive linemen are on the field every single snap. It is the single most important position in all of college football, even more than quarterback, because quarterback, you can solve quarterback by just being the highest bidder when it comes to the transfer portal wars. Oh, you need a good quarterback? Okay, just go buy Carson Beck for $3 million. That solves it. Offensive line, though, is complex because not only do you need five offensive linemen, you need backups. So, for me, who is going to emerge? I think there is a lot of momentum here for DJ Chester. Let's just say DJ Chester has a step forward in the right direction as a center. Well, that solves a big problem because you could put him at center, and Braylon Moore was only a center last year. The year before that, he was a left guard. So if you can do that, that gets you three starters. But then both of your tackles need to get solved. All right? Now, another piece of intel that I will share is that Kerryus Kern is making a lot of noise as a true freshman. Obviously, you don't want to play true freshman offensive lineman, but LSU, of course, has had success with that during the Brian Kelly era with Will Campbell and Emory Jones. So we'll see what happens there. But at this point, offensive line is a big hole. And the more I think about it, the more I think this is the biggest question mark on this team. Now, is there some positives with that? Sure. The first is Alex Atkins coming in. This is an offensive line coach who is a tight ends coach now, but he has a lot of experience with running a really fun rush attack based out of counter run plays at Florida State. So he's going to infuse, hopefully, some of his knowledge with Brad Davis's offensive line and take this unit to the next level. And then, of course, you have year two of Joe Sloan. You would like to think he's going to be a better play caller next year. And the bottom line, I got into another Garrett Nussmeier heated debate. I understand I am a Garrett Nussmeier defender, more so than most, right? To the point where, you know, I've lost subscribers for saying how good I think Garrett Nussmeier actually is. But me and my buddy Blake Ruffino got into it last night. If you want to see that, you can check it out for yourself. The old-fashioned interception debate. Here's what I like about Garrett Nussmeier. If it's difficult to – it's very difficult to run the football in college football if you don't have a quarterback who can run himself, and Garrett just does not run. But that doesn't mean it's not doable. And number two, that doesn't mean he doesn't make his offensive line better, because he does. He has one of the best pressure-to-sack ratios ever that we've ever seen in college football. So I'm very high on Garrett, as many of you know, going into next season. So that is the third biggest hole on this team. I will take a few more comments before we get to number four and number five, okay? Let's go here to Bullfrog. Was Moore any good at left guard? I watched only a few of his left guard snaps because, you know, my main focus was him being a center. But what I need to do is go back and watch some more of his left guard stuff from a few years ago to see if he can indeed help LSU out there if, of course, you get a step forward in the right direction from DJ Chester, okay? Now, let's get to hole number four. Kind of a weird one, but it's two key positions that closely aligned with one another. And that is deep snapper and punter. Okay. Deep snapper, friend of the channel, Slade Roy, has moved on to the NFL. And then, of course, you have new kickers, punters, all that good stuff. You know, I don't think you could ever say during the Brian Kelly era that LSU special teams has been elite. But it's been better. Obviously, the first season was a hellacious special teams year. Hopefully, we never get back to that. And then, of course, you have a transition here with the special teams coordinator going to Houston and Slade Nagel. But what's different is the special teams coordination has been very collaborative. The way that it was explained to me is that the analysts were very involved with how special teams was run. Obviously, Brian Kelly was involved with that as well. But you bring in the special teams coordinator from Grambling, and hopefully this unit is good next season. One area where LSU could really, really take a step forward is punting. Okay. It's not been necessarily a strong suit for LSU, but at the same time, you don't ever want to punt the football anyway. But one thing I will say is Aaron Burrell was very underrated in what he did as a true freshman last year, booting the football through the end zone. And LSU, of course, has had the good fortune of having really good kickoff specialists over the past decade. Now, Avery Atkins is the best of all time. Aaron Burrell could be even better than him. So, hole number four will be the new foots kicking the balls for LSU next year. Okay? And then hole number five will be the tight end position. It was the most interesting position going into spring, but now that they have a tight ends coach, I feel a lot better about this position with Alex Atkins coming in. But as many of us have witnessed, Mason Taylor had a really good pro day, and we have been very pro Mason Taylor on this channel. He was not a perfect player, but the problem was that he needed to be perfect because he played almost every single snap at arguably the single most exhausting position on the offensive side of the football, which is tight end. So how will the tight end rotation work? How will it? Who will emerge? I will keep pounding the table for Donovan Green. I think he's a little bit better than many would think. And at this juncture, there's many that think this is going to be a two-man race between Tre'Davious Green and Bauer Sharp. All right. But I think Donovan Green is a very, very interesting player at Texas A&M coming in. A top 100 recruit, there's a lot of good things about him that I like. But, you know, Sharp was not, to me, a great blocker at Oklahoma. Did he have good blocks at times? Absolutely, he did. But you can go to our film study on him. You could see all of that for yourself. And then, of course, Tre'Davious Green was mostly a receiver last year, but had some good blocks and did some good things in the Baylor game, playing more of a traditional tight end role. So, let's see where it goes. And then, of course, you can't count out true freshman coming in. Longtime LSU commit, J.D. LaFleur. Very strong bloodlines like Mason Taylor. So we'll see how that works itself out. So comment below. Who do you think? What do you think LSU's biggest hole on the roster is going into next season? I gave you my five. All right. Joseph says the title of this video is a pause. It is. It is. But does a human being, for it to be a pause, there would need to be five holes. I guess you you could count five holes on a human being. So there you go. Now, I do want to talk a little bit here because we are in, you know, women's basketball mode. I am very excited for Friday, Greenville, South Carolina, SEC tournament. Now, we have heard Kim share this quite a bit about, you know, the SEC tournament not mattering all that much. She doesn't downplay it, but when you've won natties and gone as far in tournaments as she has, she knows that these games really don't mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things. This year, though, could be different because you have no Flauje Johnson in the game until the NCAA tournament games actually happen. I think that's a good thing. I think if she absolutely needed to play, she could play. But I am so fired up to see who else will step up. Because you had such a great first half versus a good Ole Miss team, but you just collapse. You collapse in the second. So who's going to be that person? And the second thing I would like to see in South Carolina is experiment with different things. Don't play Samaya Smith 30-plus minutes like you have been all season long. Let's just see what Del Rosario can do in extended minutes or Jersey Wolfenbarger in particular. Let's see what she can do. And then, of course, you have LSU baseball. They do not play again until this weekend, but or at least, let me make sure I'm getting this right. they're actually first pitching here in just a second. I was looking at this wrong. Versus North Dakota State. There we go. The Fighting Carson Wentzes. That's why I always say I don't really pay attention to baseball until SEC play comes around. But good luck to the LSU baseball team tonight. I do watch some. And I went on my rant over the weekend. How could you have watched this weekend, period, with D1 baseball going down? I do want to shout out, I don't know if I'm saying her name correctly, Daily Joy. We follow each other on Twitter. She saved the lives of so many different LSU baseball fans because her stream was working. And she started a Twitter stream of the game on her main feed. That was pretty bold because you can get your Twitter following, your Twitter account shut down. But I appreciate that. I was able to watch some of it over the weekend. But North Dakota State is not ready for what LSU baseball is about to bring it here in just a second. So I'm actually going to try and tune in. Is it? Hopefully it's not on D1 baseball again. Let's see. SEC Network Plus. So there you go. I literally looked at my schedule and I was like, okay, they don't play again until Friday versus North Alabama, but I overlooked the North Dakota State Bison. We'll take a few more football ones. I'm not against some design plays with the dual threat quarterback subbing in, like Ryan Perilou in 2007. Here's my thing, Amicat. Who would be Perilou? Are you wanting that to be Juwan Johnson? Or are you wanting that to be Michael Van Buren? Let's go to Bullfrog. I could see a reality where Harlem Berry emerges very, very early as RB1. That kid ain't no joke. I don't think as RB1, but could there be a world where he is a clear cut RB1 by the end of the year? Yeah, I could see it. The funny thing is, like, I have LSU baseball alerts on Twitter. I didn't get a single one Actually, now that I see it. Okay, that makes sense. Pegasus has a Shador Sanders question. You say he's like Brock Purdy. So yeah, I think the big question, will Shador Sanders be available for the Saints at pick number 9? I think he will be. I actually feel pretty confident that he will be. So should the Saints pull the trigger? I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. It's not that I think he's bad. Like, before this season, I was completely out on him as a pro quarterback. This past year was better. But, you know, I think Baker Mayfield ran into this issue early in his career. They're college athletic. Like, Baker has good college speed. He has good college arm strength. But it's not elite at an NFL level. And now Baker is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFC. Shador's kind of in that same spot. But, you know, he's not really potent as a runner. He takes a lot of really, 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 really bad sacks. But I keep going back. You know, if he were to go to the New York Giants, the way he would fit with Malik Nabers actually sets up really nicely for Malik. But, you know, it's not here nor there. Do I think Shador Sanders, though, can be a starting quarterback in the NFL? Yes, but it would need to be a Brock Purdy situation where you're literally surrounded by superstars and the best play caller in the NFC. Okay. Let's go to Amicat. He says he heard that they were trying to save red shirts and that would make either quarterback's appearance to be limited to 4 games. All right. This honestly is a very good question and conundrum. All right. So Michael Van Buren was a year one true freshman last year. And like I've said plenty of times, where he was and the situation he was thrown into, he was really good at Mississippi State. He really was. That was the hardest SEC schedule I've ever seen a quarterback face. And he was a 5'10 true freshman going up against it. Would it behoove him and LSU to redshirt next year? It would obviously be very good for Van Buren because he can get his redshirt year out of the way. But I am of the belief that your number one backup quarterback, it needs to be clear that the redshirt preservation does not overtake how important you are to the team. All right, if that's the case, I would prefer my top backup be Colin Hurley because he's already had his red shirt burned. And look, Van Buren could be the change of pace dual threat quarterback that you can put in for some packages. He is a very good runner. I don't think he's special in that way. But I need my top backup to not have any worries with the redshirt stuff. So I understand it would be very good for Van Buren to be able to preserve his redshirt going into year three of his career as we are entering year two. It'll be very good for him. But for LSU, especially if you provide something that Garrett Nussmeier doesn't. But in Van Buren's side of things, let's just say Garrett Nussmeier were to go down. You are the starting quarterback at LSU. Do you think, as a three-star, 5'10 quarterback signing at Mississippi State, do you think in your wildest dreams that by year two in your career, you would be given the keys to one of the best programs in all of college football in year two of your career? So my question would be, yeah, that redshirt year down the line could be extremely valuable. In fact, that redshirt year is worth $500,000 minimum as a quarterback if he's good. At bare minimum, it would be $200,000 or whatever is given to every kid with the revenue sharing. But that situation is prime. That's prime real estate.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Jerry. I am. We'll take this and then we'll go watch some LSU baseball. Carter, how much does it matter to LSU if men's basketball is good or not? Would we really break the bank for a Rick Pitino or someone like that, or try another lower conference guy? So I do think Matt McMahon will be back next year. All right. You know, it's not just a Shea Dixon report, but, you know, when you are publicly critical of a coach on an LSU platform, you do get a bunch of calls, some happy, some not so happy. But when I upped my criticism of McMahon earlier this year, I kept getting told, hey, there is a higher likelihood than you think that he's going to be back next year. Okay. I just don't know if I would do that. I just don't. I think the LSU basketball job is not that coveted in the grand scheme of things, but you're still a basketball coach in the SEC that has some basketball history. All right. So, you know, I would be very much in the Tony Bennett business. And that's the direction I would go. I know he would probably have no interest, but, you know, he's got something that we want, which is a national championship in men's basketball. But Carter, what about 1930, whatever? Cool. My great-great-grandpa appreciated that. I care about the now. And I understand Tony Bennett plays the absolute most boring brand of basketball. But he wins. And I would like a winner. But the question is, does it matter if LSU men's basketball is good? Yes, it matters. Because men's basketball makes money. If your men's basketball program is good, it makes money. Now, it doesn't make football money. It doesn't. Someone messaged me trying to say, sell their season tickets earlier today. And it's a lower level, four seats. I was like, okay. And when he sent me the price, I was like, okay, that makes sense. Huh? I've never bought anybody season tickets before. But, you know, for basketball, it wouldn't cost half that. And there's way more games. But if the team is winning, it moves the needle. I say hi from the 616. It's been a minute since you dropped in. Welcome. Good to see you from the 616. Hope you are well. But yeah, it matters. It matters to me. You know, it's probably not as important at LSU for a lot of fans because we are so damn good in all the other sports. Elite in gymnastics, elite in softball, elite in baseball, elite in men's and women's golf, men's and women's tennis, sand volleyball. If there was Quidditch, LSU would be elite in it. All right. So it is a little bit easier if and when we're not a basketball school. Louisiana is not known as a basketball state. But, you know, it doesn't mean you should settle for mediocrity. It shouldn't. It shouldn't. Okay. What's out of LA, Mom? We'll take a few more here. Big thanks to our friends at Zion Imaging, the 360 Spin Booth Experience, xyanimaging.com. Okay? You know, it's not that I think Matt McMahon is just awful. Where I think it gets frisky is the SEC is just loaded. It's loaded. All right. And that's the thing, you know, with AMACAD, it especially sucks when the rest of the SEC is dominating. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not going to helicopter in and tell you I'm the college basketball wizard because I am not. But what I will say, and I really want you to lock in here, this could be the best conference in college basketball history in terms of coaches, caliber of teams. Yeah, there's a basketball Hall of Famer who was given basically unlimited NIL at a program with some history. His team sucks. That's Calipari at Arkansas. They suck. Why? Well, they do suck themselves, but a lot of it is because everybody's good. And I'm telling you right now, be careful with Texas. That is a prime job. I doubt they keep Rodney Terry. And do not be shocked that Will Wade's the coach of Texas next year. Do not be shocked. All right? Do not be shocked. Oklahoma is also going to be in the business, I think, for a new coach. That's a good job. I mean, is it a great job? No, I don't think it's a great job. But Oklahoma gets good players, right? Buddy Hield, Blake Griffin, Trey Young. They'll get some good players. It's not a nothing basketball school. Okay. Now, before we go, I do want to wish everybody a very happy Fat Tuesday. I wasn't able to go down to New Roads. That's my home. Pointe Coupee Parish, home of the best Mardi Gras floats and parades. Texas is good players. Okay. Let's go to Graham. Thoughts on the defensive tackle room and who will be the best player? I would probably lean towards Ahmad Bro at this point, but I don't know. I really, really, really don't know. The thing that sucks is a lot of those DTs that came to LSU, not only from the portal, but from high school, five in total. I would say all five of them, honestly, if you were to ask them, why did you pick LSU? I think all five would say it was 70 to 75% because of Bo Davis. Telling you right now, most players, I would say 90% of high school players still pick the school that they have the best relationship with their position coach. All right, because that's the guy who's recruiting them. I think 90 might be a little high, but a lot of people go for the position coach. That's why they do it. Okay. Now, that'll do it for me. Sorry about the LSU baseball snafu. I was going live at 6 regardless, but I'm going to go check them out. North Dakota State's not going to know what hit them. Big thanks to everybody that shows us love during the offseason. And hopefully by tomorrow, we will be celebrating a new defensive line coach hire. And we kind of wink, wink, nodded a little bit earlier. Okay?
LSU. Boom. Tonight.
Oh, we're cooking a steak. Let's go. Let's go.